keeping up a schedule acceptable to the tens of fans of our free podcast, so sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I understand where they're coming
sorry.
From.
Sorry. They clamor for us. They love us. And we love you. We love all of you. Hi, everyone. I'm
Hello.
Tyler Vaughn.
I'm Anthony Masterson.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. We are, it's only our second edition since the end of the, not even since the end of the season. I think we recorded like one in September. And then we're like, nah, screw this, whatever. This team, who cares? This is episode number 63 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. I'm going to let Anthony look up the memorial editions. But in the meantime, a very important programming note. This is actually very important. I did not even mention it to Anthony, but it'll make sense here in a minute.
Great.
Just for those of us,
it. Great.
I won $1.6 billion and I quit. No. If you are subscribed to the Purple Dinosaur Podcast on iTunes, listen carefully. There are two different Purple Dinosaur Podcast feeds through the iTunes store. There is one of those feeds that may possibly stop updating soon because ESPN Denver, as you may have heard, the station was sold, shut down. So we are no longer with ESPN Denver. Obviously, we were sort of only tacitly with ESPN Denver. We're kind of now just out with the Purple Row guys and just free. We're sort of like, what could you call us? We're like one of those weird... we're like Puerto Rico, I guess. We like sort of have ties to one area, but we're kind of on our own. We're very irresponsible financially. We're like Puerto Rico. They're in a really bad way economically. That was a very good economic politics joke.
Was it?
We're like Guam. We don't really have access to the VA. But anyway, so go on to your subscription on your mobile device. And what you want to do is find the Purple Dinosaur Podcast feed that is not coming up from ESPN. You'll see two listed. One of them says that it's by the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. The other says that it's by ESPN. Subscribe to the one that is from the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, and that will get us to you every week. As of right now, the other feed appears to be working, seems to be fine, but at some point that could be cut off, so we don't want you to be missing out on the PDP. The bummer of that is all of our best reviews are on the one that's going to be cut off. The other one we have like 3.5 stars, and the one through ESPN Denver we have like four, like almost 5 stars.
You know who's not going to be cut off? This guy.
What does that mean?
This guy's getting going.
Oh, Tyler alcohol. Spoon. Booze. Boozing. What are you drinking?
Booze.
What are you drinking? Well, I guess we should explain episode 63. First of all, who is this illustrious episode in homage to?
I mean, this one's easy. It's Rafael Betancourt. It's not even close. 63.
Not even. Who else is there?
Robbie could be the best 63 in the history of number 63s.
That's probably true. When you think about it. Not this past year, but throughout the
there's one other 63 who's very good and very nice. His name is Justin Masterson.
Right.
If you look at actually by wins above replacement on number 63s all time,
yes,
Victor Martinez has number one.
Wow, V-Mart.
Yeah, but he's not 63 anymore.
Okay.
So how much of this like just. To where 63 at one
and
point in their
And he wasn't 63.
Line.
Yeah, I was going to say, he wasn't 63 for long.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, I think that's it. Like, of someone to wear at number 63 for at least 5 seasons, Rafael Betancourt has the most wins above replacement at 14.25.
That's pretty cool. Well, congratulations,
yeah.
Rafi.
Of the guys who worked for at least 5 seasons, it goes Rafael Betancourt, Ryan Madsen, and then Justin Masterson. How about
that? Man, what a random connection to the PDP that this episode has.
Hey.
A familial tie, you might even say. Welcome in to the 63rd edition of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, the Rafi edition, but also the sort of related to Anthony edition. Here's what we have coming up on the show today.
It's a fun one, guys.
It is a good one. This is going to be a good one. Since we had not been with you for so long, wanted to get you something to be fired up about. David Dahl, the top position player prospect in all the organization, perhaps. Maybe Brendan Rodgers edges him out in your rankings via our rankings at MLB Pipeline. He is actually the second-ranked position player prospect, but that is neither here nor there. David Dahl, the top outfield prospect in all of the Colorado Rockies system, one of the best prospects in all of baseball coming into the 2016 season. He's ranked number 47 in the entirety of the game by MLB.com. David Dahl joins the show. Woo!
I'm pretty psyched about that one.
Yeah. Yeah. No, really, though. We had a lot of fun talking with David. We talked to him yesterday. We're recording this on Friday. And it was really good to talk to him. Seems like he's in very good spirits. You'll hear that here coming up in just a little bit. We're pumped. Get pumped. Are you drinking right now? Like in the middle of sentences when I stop, or are you just like mid-gulp?
Are you talking again? Sorry.
Yeah. Why? Are you just not paying attention to me?
Kind
is
of.
Is that what it is?
I'm eyeing my 40, and it's... It's laughing at me.
Oh, man. Yeah, so we have David Dahl coming up. That's in just a short bit. And then, after that, we're going to go a little bit different road on episode number 63 of the old PDP. Remember, like, when was this? Like a billion years ago when the Rockies were in the playoffs?
I vaguely recall.
Approximately when it was. It was like the Mesozoic era.
Yes.
Something like that.
When dinosaurs roamed the earth.
What Anthony and I are going to do today is we are going to, after you hear us blather a little bit about Nolan Arenado and Charlie Blackman, DJ LeMahieu, some other stuff that's been going on with the Rockies organization, we are going to dive in, imbibing some beverages, and watching the 13th inning of the 2007 National League Wild Card tiebreaker game between your Colorado Rockies and the San Diego Padres. And yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to give you some commentary. We cannot play the audio. It's a trademark copyright infringement. We can't give you play-by-play, but we'll tell you where to queue up the YouTube video if you want to watch along, and we'll make comments.
I imagine we will be giving you play-by-play in some ways.
Probably.
I mean,
well,
it's going to be fun. We're taking a cue out of Trey Parker and Matt Stone's book. If you ever listened to the DVD commentary of any of the South Park guys' movies, they do liquored up commentary, and it is delightful. Usually it's just them ripping on each other, yelling things, and then leaving halfway through. That's going to be pretty much accurate tonight.
I'm really pumped about it. In addition to all of that, there is some actual baseball news for us to discuss. So let's get started. Today, the big news item of the day, the Colorado Rockies and third baseman, all-world stud, and really handsome guy, Nolan Arenado, have agreed to a one-year deal to avoid arbitration for $5 million. This is a first-time arbitration situation for Nolan Arenado. This comes as a steal for the Rockies. But let's go into the arbitration process just really quickly, because it'll pertain to what we're talking about here for the next few minutes or so. Players who sign professional contracts under team control, guys like Nolan who come out of high school, are under control of their major league franchise for 7 years after they sign their initial contract. Which means, no matter what, for those 7 years, barring a guy being released, barring a guy being traded, he's under team control. He'll be with that club. At the major league level, guys like Nolan Arenado, who are eligible for arbitration, present a figure of what they believe they're worth. The team presents a figure of what they believe the player to be worth. Those two sides negotiate. If they can't come to a deal, then they go before an arbiter. And the arbiter rules on the side of the player or of the team. Now, two Rockies players did file for arbitration today. We'll talk about them in a minute. But this deal for Nolan, you really got to like.
I mean, 1 year, $5 million to who could arguably be the best player in the National League next year. Maybe not Bryce Harper. That's a pretty good deal. If for a short term, it gives the Rockies another year to try to work out a long-term deal. If that's the way both sides want to go, which you'd have to imagine, that would be the way that both sides would want to go. So I think it's great for the Rockies. Nolan gets his money, at least momentarily, and the Rockies get a very, very top player in the league, a guy who tied for the league lead in home runs last year, who led the league in RBI. You get him for another year at a very, very team-friendly cost. I think it's a win-win.
Our good pal Cameron Goldner laid out the facts on Purple Row. By the way, ever since like the last time we recorded this podcast, like all these people we know are writing for Purple Row, like Cam and Bobby DeMuro and Connor Farrell. And like, what happened to Purple Row over there? They used to be so good.
I mean, the standards clearly have just fallen downhill.
The thing I love, Bobby had a story the other day, and then like 8 hours later, the post came out with just a rewritten version of the same story.
It's like
fantastic.
Like a word here, a word
it
there.
It was like how it,
when you were like, in 10th grade growing up, you see something you want, like, oh, I want to write about that. And then you try to find it, but like change like four of the
I'll
words.
I'll copy and paste it and then just grab a thesaurus.
Yes.
That was basically it. But here's what Cam had to say. In just his third season, Arenado was a Super 2 arbitration candidate, meaning that he was in the top 17% of service time for all players with fewer than 3 years on a major league roster. $5 million Arenado receives, largest arbitration settlement given to a Super 2 player since Ryan Howard was given $10 million prior to the 2008 season. So, I mean, this comes as a bargain for the Rockies. It also kind of sheds some light on just how impactful a young guy can be at the major league level, still under team control, when you don't have to shell out a ton of money for him. The way that this works now, unless the Rockies and Nolan negotiate a long-term extension, this will be the situation until he is out of his arbitration years, where they're kind of going from year to year with these one-year deals. And it's still another few years for Nolan under team control. So right now, he comes in as a relative bargain. Do the Rockies negotiate a long-term thing with him? Maybe. We don't know.
Yeah, but I think just the fact that he is going to be here and getting his money and still contributing for the Rockies next year in a very, very cost-friendly way is a huge, huge boost for the Rockies. I mean, there are things, obviously, that you worry about with Nolan Arenado, especially the walk rate's the big thing for me, and that's what I look at for Nolan going forward. He only had 34 walks in 616 at-bats last year, and frankly, I'm a little terrified at what might happen if anything regresses, but thankfully, Nolan Arenado is still probably the best defensive third baseman in all of baseball. So his value is still going to be very high because of that. But you have to hope that the walk rate can increase a little bit, improve just ever so slightly. If that happens, he could become one of the best all-around players in baseball.
All right. Now, there are two other guys to keep an eye on during this arbitration season who have filed different numbers, could be headed for arbitration with the Rockies. They are Charlie Blackmon and DJ LeMahieu. Blackmon, according to John Heyman today, filed at $3.9 million. That's basically his request for his salary for the 2016 season. Rockies countered at $2.7 million. DJ LeMahieu filed at $3.3 million. Rockies came back at $2.8 million. Not a huge divide there. What this means, these two sides, these, I guess, three sides technically, have to come to an agreement on a deal or they risk going before an arbiter. Now, the Rockies have only gone to arbitration with one time since 2008. That was Willene Rosario last year. He filed, according to Eric Garcia McKinley of Purple Row, for $3.3 million. The Rockies filed for $2.8. They won that arbitration case. The last time prior to that they went to arbitration was Brian Fuentes back before 2008. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. It doesn't generally go that far for the Rockies.
Nah, and usually if there's not a very large divide, that can get hammered out pretty easily between both parties. So that's why it's rare for the Rockies to get that, because I think Fuentes came in with a very, very high number that he wanted to get paid after the 07 season. But at that time, which was hilarious, that he was not the closer anymore, because that was coming off the World Series year. Manny Corpus was installed as a closer. And
Manny got a three-year deal that offseason, I
believe. Yeah, and Fuentes wanted to be paid like a closer, and the Rockies said no. And, yeah, that's what happened.
So that's where we are right now with those two guys. And with Nolan Arenado, really exciting for the Rockies. They're able to bring him back into the fold, $5 million. You're not really worrying about, oh, is he upset about what he ended up getting in or out of the arbitration system? Seems like it's pretty well fine. Let's move on to one more topic of conversation. News came down today, according to the New York Daily News, which has been on fire, by the way, as a liberal rag over the last month or so. I love them. They today noted that Rockies shortstop Jose Reyes will stand trial on domestic abuse charges in Hawaii on opening day.
Hooray!
That is when that trial is supposed to start. Reyes arrested on October 31st. He was charged with, quote, abuse of a family and or household member, of course, after the altercation with his wife. This is according to our good pal Craig Calcaterra at Hardball Talk, which sent her to the hospital with multiple injuries. Since then, he's been posting about how great life is, rap album, hip-hop songs, whatever the hell he's been doing. Jose Reyes, talk about an albatross hanging around this team's neck going toward 2016. Basically, what you've done is you've screwed yourselves out of the money that you're going to have to pay him. The Rockies had no way of knowing this was going to happen.
Absolutely. It happened after the season.
Kind of sucks. Yeah. It's a rough spot for them to be in as an organization.
It's definitely worse for his wife.
Exactly. More than that, Jose Reyes put his wife in a terrible spot, as it appears via these allegations. And that's the overarching story with this. But what it means from a baseball sense, I think Trevor Story is more than likely going to be your opening day shortstop. I mean, you can look at various other yeah. situations. Do they look at Christian Adamas? They look at Daniel Descalso, but why the hell not? Why would you, if Trevor Story is ready to go, why not? He's not going to be a huge money guy. He's not Chris yeah. Bryant. You're not keeping him down to deflate his future value.
You know? The only guy that you have as a free agent, as a shortstop right now, is Ian Desmond. And I don't think they're going to want to have to pay free agent money for a guy like Ian Desmond when they have internal options.
Right. So that's how
it's a very,
I
very good
think.
Chance. I haven't even thought about that. But considering, do you think they made that date for the trial like on purpose? Do you think like the judge looked at it like, oh, he plays baseball? Oh, perfect.
Or Jose Reyes' attorneys were like, okay, he plays for the Rockies. Is there anything you can do to get him out of playing for the Rockies? Like maybe, I don't know.
Hey, the Rockies will take that deal. They'll take that deal in a heartbeat. Are you kidding?
So Jose Reyes, as this is kind of another component to this, Reyes, according to Craig Calcaterra, could, quote, potentially face deportation if he is convicted of a crime of violence. There are likely to be continuing plea negotiations here, however, and it's possible that lesser charges or some resolution could be attempted by Reyes' lawyers to protect against that possibility. But as of right now, there isn't any real clarity on what his status as a citizen is or is not. And if you are convicted of domestic violence, you could be deported. So the Rockies can not only be without Jose Reyes, his wife could see this thing come to a much larger scenario than what it is just in the court case itself. I mean, this could be something where he is actually kicked out.
And I believe, regardless, that Rob Manfred could come down and rule independently the law and suspend him for X amount of games based on the brand new domestic violence policy put in by MLB last August.
Yeah, he could basically go Roger Goodell on it.
Right. If he wants to. Yeah, he hasn't made a decision on Reyes yet, hasn't made a decision on Aroldis Chapman yet.
Right.
But we'll see when that actually comes to fruition.
So no matter what, the overarching story is, I hope that his wife is somewhere safe and has moved on with her life to a place where she feels, safe and taken care of and okay. But this is also, we're a baseball podcast. It's a headache for the baseball team as well. So we figured we had to throw an update in there for that.
Let's just hope he doesn't play for the Rockies again. I'm not a huge fan of that.
Yeah, just from the baseball standpoint.
Anyway, and this is just the icing on the cake for me not wanting him back.
He's just not really good. Also,
yeah, he's not really good, and he's
the other
kind
thing,
of a dick. So, what's the point?
there we are. The Rockies evidently are still in trade talks surrounding their three left-handed hitting outfielders. They now have four of them. They signed Gerardo Parra.
You count Ben Paulson, they have five.
Yeah, we don't really
know. Five left-handed hitting outfielders.
What the situation is with any of those, but something big happens. We'll be here to talk about it.
Big things happening.
Big things popping. So with that, let's talk to a left-handed Rockies outfield prospect. Left-handed hitting David Dahl, who joins the 63rd edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast to talk spleens and talk golf and talk Alabama and Auburn and rivalries and all kinds of stuff. David Dahl joins the show. Well, since we've, done like two episodes since the conclusion of the 2015 season, we wanted to bring you something that would be exciting for people that isn't listening to me and Anthony talk, because nobody gets excited about that.
No,
so,
not a person in the world.
With that, no pressure on our guest for this week's edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast. David Dahl, top Rockies outfield prospect, joins the show from the Phoenix area, the Scottsdale area, getting set for spring training here and coming up in, a month and 5 days, pitchers and catchers report. David, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How are you guys?
We're great.
Appreciate
man.
You guys having me on here.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. It's this offseason has been kind of different for you. You actually are living in the Phoenix area, hanging out at the facility every day. Salt River Field's a talking stick, which is pretty much the greatest place on earth. Like, you go to Coors Field or other awesome ballparks, and then you go to Salt River, and you're like, man, they should just play everything here because this place is amazing. What's it been like for you getting to hang out, be around the facility, be around all the coaches, be around some teammates, and doing the full offseason this year in the Phoenix area?
That's been great. I love living out here in Arizona. You can't beat the weather out here. You get on the field, do whatever you need to do baseball wise, and that's awesome. And then living with teammates and working out with some of the guys at the facility, it just pushes you to be better, and just you look forward to finally once getting up to the big leagues one day and helping the Rockies win.
We'd be remiss if we didn't start, go back to the infamous day last year, the day of the spleen. You have this violent collision in center field, but you get up, you walk off under your own power, get back to the clubhouse. Now, when did you know that something was seriously wrong at that point?
I had a feeling when I got in the clubhouse and I was getting checked out. Like, I couldn't lay down. I couldn't stand up. Like, nothing. Like, it was just a sharp pain in my side, and I felt like I had to, like, throw up, but I couldn't. So it was like I was just really nauseous, and it was just a really bad feeling. So right then I knew something else, like something was pretty seriously wrong.
So and you go to the hospital then, and the doctors give you the diagnosis of what's actually happened. Now, did they give you options right away, or did you, you know, hear what they had to say and then kind of decide later about how to proceed,
yeah,
whether it was
so,
take your spleen out or rest and recovery?
I got taken in an ambulance to the hospital, and we get there and they do like the CT scans and stuff like that. And they see that like severe lacerations in my spleen where it was really bad. And they came in and they said, you know, we want to stop the bleeding. So I did like an emergency surgery, like right away, for them to go in and like stop the bleeding. So I wouldn't like bleed out or anything. And then after that was good, about a day late, like the next day, the doctor came in and said, like, went over the options with us and gave us like a day or two to think about it, and came in and we told them we wanted to get it removed laparoscopically.
Do you have any regrets about making that decision right then, or do you think you made the right decision going forward? I mean, you came back within, what, 6 weeks, something along those lines, and now you're back ready to go. Do you think that was the right decision as you go forward in your career?
Yeah, 100%. I think it was the right decision.
David, when you look back on that year, I mean, it's so bizarre. A couple of seasons ago, you had the torn hamstring. I mean, that's something that happens to an athlete. But to have a lacerated spleen is so strange. But when you look back at that day or remember, you know, what all you went through, how lucky do you feel that it wasn't anything worse? I mean, so many guys go through outfield collisions and come up, you know, a little bit banged up or a concussion or a limb injury here and there. But to suffer an internal injury like that is kind of terrifying. Mm-hmm. I mean, and especially for you, your dad was there when it happened. Your mom came to town shortly thereafter. The really cool thing for us was getting to watch the way people embraced you and encouraged you on social media when you were posting stuff from the hospital and photos and tweets and stuff like that. I mean, just looking back on it now, how emotional is it to remember all that and the fact that it wasn't more serious?
Yeah, I'm really blessed to come out okay, because, you know, the doctor even said, you know, there's been instances where people actually bleed out and like die before they even get to the hospital. So it's, you know, I'm really blessed that I had God looking down on me and helping me out. And then just seeing like the support and stuff that I had was amazing. And it really helped me, like helped me even more get through it.
The crazy thing, you get back, rehab with Boise really briefly, and then you move back up to New Britain. And then a few days later, as you told me in our MILB Q&A, you foul a ball off your knee, and then that kind of just gets to be a little bit worse. You get through the end of a season, it's the whole grind of going through 140 games, and that got to a point where it was uncomfortable for you to walk on and all that. So instead of going to the Arizona Fall League, the Rockies let you rest. What has it been like now, being able to get through a few months of just being able to work out, eat right, get your body feeling healthy and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, it's great. Like, I feel I'm 100% healthy, strong as I ever been, running really well, hitting on the field, doing everything. So I feel great, and I'm just ready to go and ready for the season to get started.
Yeah, are there any drastic changes in the way you have to go about your daily routine now, sans spleen? I mean, is there something like, do you have to take vitamins? Do you have to make sure what you ingest, how you work out, or things you can't do that you used to be able to?
Not really. They just, you know, some of the things were, I got to get like flu shots, some vaccination shots every couple years, but they gave me like a list of stuff, and just like shots, like stuff like that. Nothing like crazy that alters the way I go about my business during the day or anything like that. So I haven't had to like really change anything. It's just, if I get sick or start feeling sick, I got to go to the, like, I got to get antibiotics faster than most people, because it could turn out to be something worse if I don't get rid of it now. So, but it hasn't been a problem at all since it's happened. Like, I haven't had to deal with anything.
David, you had combined over two different seasons at the end of 2013, or at the beginning of 2013, rather, started with Asheville, then had the injury, then really blew up in 2014 with Asheville. The guys ended up going on, you returned to that team to win a South Atlantic League title. But you really basically, for the most part, got to skip over Class A Advanced. You played about 30 games there at the end of 2014, then you jump right into Double A in 2015. And everything that went along with that, you know, starting a little slow, then really hitting your stride, then the injury comes, but then you come back, and in 73 total games, you bat 278, you got an OPS of 721. I mean, just really, really good work across the board. Did it, I don't want to say did it surprise you, but were you impressed with how well you were able to handle a really difficult level, kind of a make or break level in Double A, and not the easiest environments to hit in the Eastern League, and especially coming off the injury and all that stuff? I mean, 2015, maybe because of the injury and the amount of games you played, may not look like a breakout season to a lot of people, but it's a really impressive season.
Yeah, I had a pretty good season. Obviously, I still have a lot of stuff I need to work on and improve on. But, you know, for coming off an injury and for starting out that slow, like, you know, I was pretty happy how I ended. You know, I wish I would have got to play the last 2 weeks, but my knee couldn't hold up. But, you know, I was pretty happy how I came back from the injury and just was competing and, you know, trying to help the team win in whatever way I could do.
What are the biggest things that you have worked on this offseason? You said you had some things to work on going forward to complete your game. What has your main focus been? Is it strength? Is it, you know, going the other way? Is it the off-speed pitch? Like, what is it this year for you?
Well, right now, like, or lately, it's been getting my strength and kind of my weight back, stuff like that. And then just trying to get my swing to where I'm, you know, I have good balance, rhythm, and timing. I can, you know, pick up pitches better and work on my plate discipline and stuff like that.
David, one of the things that we talked about in the MILB story is how many talented guys are coming up right now in this system around you at the upper levels, at the lower levels especially. You're living with a couple of those guys, Trevor Story and Ryan McMahon. The Rockies posted a video today of Trevor Story deadlifting 500 pounds, which Anthony tweeted out from our account that, like, I think both of us this would apply to. Like, our arms would just rip off of their sockets if we even attempted that. But there's so much talent coming up right now around you. How exciting is that for you guys, A, and B, how much fun is it for you guys being able to come up together and everybody seemingly getting along and really enjoying each other? I mean, I see, like, the way from day to day you guys tweet at Carell Prime when he's in Australia, or you're joking around about movies that you've seen. How cool is that for you guys?
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, we've built a bunch of really good relationships here, and, you know, we hang out off the field and, you know, we're so close, so we have each other's back on the field. If a guy doesn't get the job done, we know someone else picks us up. And it's a really good feeling to have. Like, we're a family, we're a bunch of brothers, and it helps out. And it's really exciting seeing, like, all the talent we have. And, you know, hopefully we can just keep getting better and one day going up to the bigs and helping whatever way we can.
Yeah, I'm sure you know the issues this team has had at the major league level with pitching, but I mean, you've seen Jeff Hoffman pitch, you've seen John Gray pitch. What have you seen from some of those pitchers in the organization that can give you hope as you guys go forward up the minor league ladder?
Yeah, we have a bunch of good pitchers in our system, and, you know, it's just from what I've seen, you know, Hoffman's really good. He competes. Freeland, he's got really good stuff. Gray, you know, and so on. So we have a bunch of guys that can go get the job done. It's just, you know, everybody's got to just keep getting better, and, you know, and they're going to one day get up there and help the team win.
David, let me ask you this. There is a situation going on right now with the ballpark in Hartford. This may not affect you. I mean, depending on where you start 2016. But as of right now, the Eastern League announced this week that the Hartford Yard Goats will spend at least the first month, 5 weeks of the season on the road before returning home if the ballpark is ready by mid-May. For you guys, let's say you are a part of the Yard Goats to start 2016. How does that affect you guys? I think most people would look at that and be like, oh, man, what a nightmare being on the road for a month, 30-plus games, riding around on the buses, the, you know, the road trip spreads and hitting up dollar menus, whatever it is. But, you know, from the player's side, I talked to a couple guys who were with Biloxi last year, did it for almost 2 months. You get a per diem every day, which is nice for a lot of guys. You don't have to worry about finding a place to rent or to live for the first couple months of the season. I mean, how do you guys view that? Is that a challenge, or is it kind of one of those things that, you know, I mean, you can't really do anything about it, so you just have to embrace it?
Yeah, you really can't do anything about it, so you just got to take it day by day, embrace it, and just go have fun and play as a team. And, you know, one day down the road, you'll look back and say it helped you. You know, it's nothing we can control. So just try not to, we don't really think about it that much.
Yeah, you know, David, what's your long-term goal for at least this year? I mean, guys go in, they have certain things they want to accomplish in a certain season. Obviously, I'm sure you know your name is on the top of a lot of prospect lists for this organization. But what do you want to accomplish at bare minimum in 2016?
I want to go out and just play the game the right way and have fun doing it and stay healthy and just not trying to think about like whenever I can get a call up to the big, just going out handling my business every single day, and you know, whatever happens will happen. But my main thing is just to go out and, you know, stay healthy.
All right, David, I gotta ask you this, because this is a fascinating sports fan question to me. So we initially asked if you'd be available for an interview earlier this week. Monday night was a national championship game. You were an Alabama native and a Birmingham native, but you were an Auburn signee out of high school. Is that right?
Yes, sir, I was.
So how do you – so I assume you were going for the Crimson Tide on Monday. How do you what's the fandom like there for you in football? Because that's like a – I mean, those are like the Capulets and the Montagues. That's like a Shakespearean hatred.
Yeah. I love college football, and I'm a big Auburn fan. And, you know, honestly, I was going for Clemson.
Oh, okay. Good.
I tweeted about Alabama a couple times just because, you know, they're so good. And if I was the top, like, college football recruit, I would probably end up going to Bama just because they win championships and develop so many first rounders that are in the NFL. So I did tweet about that, but I was going for Clemson.
So does that mean then going in the NFL playoffs, are you kind of a de facto Cam Newton and Panthers fan for the rest of the year?
Yeah, I would like to see – I'd like to see Cam win.
Okay. All right. Well, that makes sense. That's good to know, because I was wondering, is it like – do you have like warring allegiances like at Alabama for football?
I think you Panthers-Broncos Super Bowl. That's fine. Cam Newton gets it. All the PDP fans get Rockies fans.
We'll call that the David Dahl Bowl. That'll be the David Dahl Super Bowl.
There you go.
David, thanks a ton for joining us, man. Congratulations on being healthy, feeling good, strong finish to last year, and really excited to see where you end up this year. I'm sure we'll run into you at spring training, and best of luck for, you know, the next couple of months before it all gets rolling again.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it.
Hey, big thanks to David Dahl. You can follow David Dahl on Twitter. He is at ddahl21. That's D-A-H-L, his last name. That was great. We actually did not ask him about golf.
No. I thought you were going to. That was the whole thing. You're like, all right, I have an idea. I asked him about it for the minor league baseball Q&A.
Yeah.
He's playing golf right-handed now, so it doesn't mess up his baseball swing.
Which amazes me.
But he's terrible at golf anyway.
Right.
So playing with his wrong hand makes him even worse, and all his teammates do, and his friends do, is mock him mercilessly.
Just rip on him. Rip on him. And, I forgot to ask him about that. But gives me a good chance to plug. If you go to MILB.com, you can read my Q&A with one David Dahl from Birmingham, Alabama. Same place as St. Paul and the Broken Bones. They're also from Birmingham, Alabama. So go do that. Big thanks to David. And, we're going to switch gears. As Anthony noted a minute ago, this could either be the best thing we've done on this podcast or just the biggest abject failure that we've done on this
podcast.
We
really don't know. It could
have no
be
idea.
A nightmare.
I don't even remember who suggested this. Somebody suggested this over the summer, I think when we were doing a PDP Rain Delay Theater once, of like, you guys should find old classic Rockies things to watch on YouTube and do the podcast commenting on them. And I was like, you know what? That's a great off-season idea. And then we've had like 3 months of the
Periscope.
Off-season.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a Periscope suggestion. That was it. But we don't live in the same place. That makes it difficult.
No, it does. It makes it very difficult.
Okay, so here we are. So
set it up.
October 1st, 2007, your Colorado Rockies and the San Diego Padres, each at the end of the regular season, 89 up, 73 down. Wins and losses, that would be. The Rockies, you remember going into that final weekend against the Diamondbacks, looked like all hope was lost. The Padres were playing against the Brewers. The Rockies division champs were in town. They actually clinched that weekend. The Diamondbacks did. Webb was on the mound, I believe, against Aaron Cook. And it looked like it was all for naught for the Rockies. And then Tony Gwynn Jr., the triple in Milwaukee when he was playing against the Padres, not for the Padres. That kind of kept the Rockies' hopes alive. They ended up getting the win on Sunday. The Rockies did to clinch the tie. That was over the Diamondbacks in the afternoon game. Kind of remember that famous shot of Todd Helton jumping up and down like a psycho. Then the next day, they had the tiebreaker, which was Monday, October 1st, 48,404 in attendance. I was there. Were you there? No, you were working,
I was,
right?
No, I was in...
Oh, you were still in
school.
I was still
my senior year college at Kenyon College.
That is right.
Yeah. Yeah, the Rockies had won 11.
This is how long ago.
Yeah.
God almighty. That's how long ago. I was 5 months removed from graduating college. I am now almost 9 years.
You were still in college.
Now almost 90 years old, and you were still in college.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rockies won 11 in a row coming into this series with the Diamondbacks. They just swept the Dodgers in L.A., after sweeping that four-game set against L.A. to pretty much begin that
Spilly
series.
Spilly had a big play in that series.
Saito. Yes.
Yeah.
Big and they came catch. In. Brandon Webb lost to Jeff Francis actually lost to Brandon Webb in that game on that Friday.
Okay.
So Francis was on the hill in that game. But then came back, won the next two. And then, yes, Tony Gwynn Jr. Will always be remembered for the Rockies in that respect.
So we're not going to watch the entire game. Because
that's five and a half hours
on YouTube. But we are going to watch the 13th inning, and we are going to watch it from a YouTube page, Classic MLB 11. I'm pretty sure it's up there legally.
Absolutely, because the quality is just absolutely.
Yeah, the quality is terrible. The commercials are in the broadcast still.
I'm more excited about that.
It's fantastic.
I want to see what commercials we can rip on.
I know. I don't even know if it's a local
feed. From 9 years ago.
I think it's like a feed from somewhere else. I wish it was Denver.
It's TBS. I mean, it's Turner Broadcasting.
But does it come from a local, does it come with like local commercials?
God, I hope so. God, I'm really
And I hope they're, honestly, I hope they're not Denver commercials. I hope we can rip on, you and I, people think we're good at this podcast. Our best work ever as friends and coworkers is just ripping on commercials.
Yes.
I do it for the PDP account all the time.
We'd win gold medals for ripping on commercials if that was a thing.
Okay, so here we are. Here's the stage. The stage set. As you may recall, the Rockies built an early 3-0 lead in that game against all world everything at that time, Jake Peavy.
Triple crown winner Jake Peavy that year
in 2007. Top of the third inning, the Padres against Josh Fogg, the Dragon Slayer, got a five spots. They took a 5-3 lead. Rockies chipped away, got a run back in the third, a run in the fifth to tie it, took the lead in the sixth, and then coughed it up in the eighth. So it was a tie game after 9, tied after 10, tied after 11, tied after 12, and that is where we start. I don't even remember the broadcast. Well, we should also say we're drinking.
Yes. Oh, well, yeah. I've already got half a 40 down.
Yeah.
And it's in a shatterproof bottle, which I'm very excited about.
Yeah. That's
because I did not know that that was a thing now that 40s have 40. Shatterproof bottles.
40s.
40s.
Not
that
40s.
They are only in plastic bottles now because in back
they
in my
only
day.
Only are?
Yeah. Back in my day, 40s were made out of glass.
Okay.
And, you know, and that was the cool part because you could drink what was inside and then get so angry you just drank what you drank that you'd smash the bottle and all would be well in the world.
Huh.
But now, shatterproof bottles, like it's SMH, man.
Huh. SMDH. I'm drinking some Colorado bourbon whiskey from Mile High Spirits. I'm just going whiskey, neat. That's what I'm doing.
Oh, man.
Here's Jorge Julio.
Oh, God, Jorge Julio. How bad was he that year?
Jorge Julio, 0-5, the 4.94 ERA, and 62 innings that year.
Ugh.
Those are the numbers. Okay, so we're getting started right now. So top of the 13th, it's a 6-6 game.
First pitch, Jorge Julio nearly goes to the backstop. Let's just throw that
out there.
Good
start, Jorge Julio.
Good start, Jorge.
Who was the broadcast crew on this game? It was Joe Simpson and
it
who?
It was, I think, Orsillo.
Oh, yeah.
And Sager was there.
I remember.
Second pitch was at his eyes, so sorry to start.
Well with Jorge Julio.
He was the ninth pitcher for the Rockies to pitch in this game. And Tulo, as a rookie, by the way, already coming in to go
already.
Have a chat with Julio, saying,
this was my favorite thing
by the
that
way,
Tulo ever did.
How about you throw a pitch near the strike zone, and we'll see what happens.
Maybe throw some strikes.
What a dumpster fire he was.
2-0 already on Brian Giles. Craig Sager's gone through a lot, the cancer diagnosis and chemo and all that stuff, and I'm really happy to see Craig Sager okay these days. But back then, when I was just a snooty recent college grad, Craig Sager annoyed the crap out of me because of the ties and the suits and whatever. He threw one strike. It's 3-1 now.
and that one strike was borderline.
By the way, this is basically the way that Anthony and I called games. We would just have conversations, and then every once in a while we just toss in like, oh, threw a strike finally. But Craig Sager, I remember that night, actually the night after this game, seeing Craig Sager. How was that ball four?
The best piece of the entire at bat was ball four.
That's lame. By the way, if you want to, you can go to it's timed this. The file is about 5 hours and 8 minutes long. 4 hours, 22 minutes and 16 seconds is when we started this video. So if you want to rewind, go back and watch with us on YouTube. Search Rockies Wild Card 2007. This will be the one that comes up at 5 hours and 8 minutes. But anyway, this night, I saw Craig Sager walking out of Coors Field, and I said to my longtime best friend, Travis Owen, I said, man, here comes that douche with those suits, and I'm fairly certain that he heard me, and I felt like a jerk ever after.
What the hell's wrong with you?
I don't know. I was 22.
You're such
and
a jerk, man.
Not nice.
By the way, I love how they're promoing the Yankees-Indians game yeah. one of the ALCS there. Yeah. I was actually at that game, the only playoff game I've ever attended in my life, Yankees-Indians game one. I was still in Kenyon College, which is in about 2 hours from Cleveland. I went there. CeCe Sabathia versus Chinmay Wong. The Indians rolled. LeBron was there with his posse, rocking a Yankees hat.
Because LeBron
is the
front-runniest
front-runner who ever front-runnered.
Huge controversy. Well, until Drake came along.
And he walked out in the fifth inning through like the entire mess with all the Yankees fans, all the Indians fans there. And by the way, Scott Hairston, who
it's
like 9,000 against the Rockies, just
Man,
hit a two-run home.
That did not take long. It was a walk to Giles and then the second pitch to Hairston.
On five pitches. So 7 pitches in, a walk, and it's 2 runs for the Padres. Scott Hairston, by the way, is maybe the greatest hitter ever against the Rockies.
Yeah,
in his
probably.
It's funny. I've actually looked at the numbers in his career against the Rockies. They're worse than I thought, which is stupid. He had 11 career home runs against the Rockies, his third most against any opponent. He had 12 against Philly and 14 against the Giants. But he only hit .273 with an .867 OPS, which is very good. But at the same time, Scott Hairston, I felt like, hit 9 home runs every single time he faced the Rockies.
Yeah,
he had a cycle.
9 for 9.
Mets. Yeah.
Every time he saw the Rockies.
Every time he saw the Rockies, he was just like, oh, thank God. Oh, and then the next pitch after the – it was like right at Adrian Gonzalez's face.
I was going to say, okay, so we're 8 pitches into this inning so far. Jorge Julio has basically almost drilled every guy in the head, and here comes Dak.
Here comes Dak. Oh, it's Chase Headley. Chase Headley pinch hitting for Joe Thatcher.
Oh, man. This is also in the time when the Padres had those urine-colored uniforms. They called them sand.
They look like straight – piss.
They really do. Like, they look like someone soaked the entire roster's uniforms in a vat of urine. And then we're like, why don't you just wear these as the road uniforms?
Okay, what's better? The Padres piss uniforms or the Rockies rocking the vests?
Oh, God, the vests are so terrible.
The black vests.
The vests are so bad. And they're still bad. They were bad then, they're bad now. And my favorite Rockies trivia question or trivia note to throw out there, the vests were originally designed to be worn with purple sleeves, and they wore them one time on the road with purple sleeves. By the way, Scott Hairston, that was not a cheap one. I was like out to left center off the back wall of the handicap row.
That was a shot.
They wore the black vest with purple sleeves one time and then never again. They wore them once on the road in San Francisco.
And MLB The Show as your uniform option.
I know. Why is that?
I have no idea. Jorge Julio giving a base hit to Chase Headley here. He's
had
a great time here.
Good Brad Hopp out there.
Oh, Brad Hopp.
Oh, there's some dynamite analysis. Jorge Julio has not been the answer.
What if
he's somewhere
we know in the stands?
I know.
And fan cutaways.
I was there. Maybe they'll show the like way up on the – well, that took a long time. 3 batters. What did that end up being, 10 pitches? And here comes Clint already.
He threw 11 pitches, 6 balls. He faced
Good
3
God
batters.
Almighty.
Gave up a homer and 2 hits. Jorge Julio, job well done.
This is when he gets booed.
Job well done.
Pretty vociferously booed, as I recall.
I mean, if you have the sound up. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
8-6 in the 13th. All right. Commercials. Okay. Here we go. Here we go. We're going to have 2 sets of commercials now? Hell yeah.
TBS Hot Corner.
God, remember that? Remember when the internet was still like new in 2007?
I think Al Gore had just come out with it.
Oh, my God.
Oh, the Dane Cook commercials!
Dane Cook commercials!
Oh, my God!
Todd Helms
should have a
batting average.
He should
have a batting outstanding.
Oh, this is amazing. This was great because this is the promo that did not include the Rockies. They didn't have the Rockies in that promo. Oh, that's awesome.
Oh my God, this is incredible.
I have no
I hope you're all having as much fun with this as we are.
Yeah, because this is great for us. This is already very entertaining
like said,
for us.
This may be just the worst thing ever.
And
are you seeing a Rent-A-Center commercial?
Like an hour. Yeah, I'm getting a Rent-A-Center
commercial. Okay, guys, we have the same feed then.
Yeah, yeah.
This could be the worst thing for anybody possibly involved, but...
This episode is going to be like an hour and a half long because it's going to be us watching all of these commercial breaks and dicking around.
Oh, God, it's great. I don't care. I don't even care at all.
Okay, so back now.
Oh, God. I want more than a Dane Cook at a Rent-A-Center commercial.
I know, Dane Cook. I forgot about those. Here's another shot of the...
Do you know he's in a movie now where he plays like an astronaut who is sent into some like... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and it's supposed to be like a serious
It's like
movie
called
now?
Like 400 Days or something, okay. And if they're like an astronauts and they're sent on some like mission to see if people can last on a trip to Mars, and they find out there's like a government conspiracy. I don't know. It's something stupid. But there was like a decent cast in it, and Dane Cook was there, and I was like, that seems implausible.
Dane Cook, or as he is known in 2016,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kevin Hart.
It was Brandon Routh, the old Superman.
Oh, also, weird.
Yeah. And also Tom Cavanaugh from Ed. Remember that show on NBC?
Yeah,
Ed?
I do remember that.
Better known as JD's big brother on Scrubs.
Wow. Yeah, you're a big Scrubs fan, as I recall.
Huge Scrubs guy.
By the way, Ramon Ortiz in now.
Oh, Ramon Ortiz.
For the Rockies.
God.
But no, Dane Cook was hilarious when I was in college for like a year.
Harmful
and then he just jumped on. Well, like right around this. Yeah. Right around when he was doing these promos. He was hysterical for a while.
Yeah.
By the way, Ramon Ortiz was atrocious. 12 innings pitched that season. Does that say 8.25 for ERA?
It was 13 innings with the Rockies, well, including this one, I guess. Finished with a 7.62 ERA in those 13 appearances with the Rockies. A 7 strikeout, 7 walk, K to walk ratio.
Good Lord. And actually,
his FIP was higher than his ERA, and his ERA was 7.62.
Here's young Agon, by the way. So right now, Padres have 2 home. There's a runner at first. Nobody out. It doesn't really matter because we know they don't score the rest of this inning. But still, this was so nerve-wracking.
Great. Yeah.
This was terrifying at the time. Because it's runner at first, nobody out. Adrian Gonzalez is up. Ramon Ortiz is in the game, who's a terrible reliever.
I mean, he was literally the 10th pitcher pitched in the game. He was the last option.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. That game, so Baseball Reference has the win probability chart.
Right.
And that win probability chart is also like if you had an emotional graph of like suicidal rage and disappointment on one end of the spectrum and like orgasmic bliss on the other, that is what we all felt that day.
I can knock that out in 20 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it really was. It was like the moment of Harrison's home run. I just remember my overriding thought, and I was on the first baseline in the third deck. I was there with my best friend since we were, you know, fetuses. And I remember looking at him and thinking to myself, well, I mean, like, not, we weren't in the same vicinity, but, you know, we've known each other for a long time. But I remember thinking, like, it can't end like this. Like, they did not come all this way over September and into October for it to end like this.
13 of 14 at this
point. Yeah, at the end of the regular season, 13 of 14.
Remember when he struck out Adrian Gonzalez on high cheese?
That made total sense. Ramon Ortiz in this inning looked like a guy who they just plucked off. He was just walking down Blake Street, and they're like, we need someone. Get in there.
He's like, I pitched before in the major leagues. Like, sure, whatever, who cares?
He looked as surprised as anyone that he got that strikeout. Ramon Ortiz was just as baffled as the rest of us. Oh, my God, Khalil Green's hair.
I think they had like 53-man rosters for this game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the very least, just because it was, you know, playing game like, whatever. Shoot for the moon, guys.
God, Khalil Green's hair was the worst.
Okay, let's talk about Khalil Green for a second. Khalil Green was supposed to be so good. Then, like, the anxiety issues, right?
Yeah.
That's what kind of sent him down?
He had some relatively... consuming personality issues. He ended up playing in 736 career major league games. He finished with the Cardinals. You kind of forget about that.
Yeah.
He flies out
that was the, he couldn't deal with anything after that. He just flew to left field. But like in this year, in 2007, 27 homers.
He was a stud that year.
97 ribbies, hit 254, 759 OPS. He wasn't much of a a disciplined guy. He had 32 walks in 611 at bats, kind of like what Nolan did this year, to be honest, without as much of the power. But like, he had 15 home runs in four consecutive seasons as a shortstop, OPS above 720 every year. Like, as a, you take that as a shortstop and play pretty good defense for the most part. Like, he was one of the guys. And just, man,
he never really lived up to his rookie season. He was a stud. He was a stud that year. His rookie year, OPS of 795, played in 139 games, finished second in rookie of the year voting. This is how long ago that was. Second in rookie of the year voting to Jason Bay.
Oh, God.
With the Pirates. The Rockies, by the way, that year had the number four and number five finishers in rookie of the year voting. As Tulo goes out, makes a grab, and then retires.
He grabbed that ball like in like middle of center field. This one Tulo was never hurt.
Yeah, never. And he was good.
When you didn't worry about Troy Tulowitzki getting hurt when he made any play ever.
Who was in center field in this game?
I think Corey Sullivan at that point.
Oh, yeah, because it wasn't Willie, because Willie was hurt.
Yeah, Willie and he came back for the CS, I believe, right? That was when he made the crazy catch. He may have played the DS,
too. The CS. He came back in game.
Yeah, Sullivan was in the game. Arizona. He had two at-bats in that game. Or three at-bats. He walked in as well.
Now, Ernie Johnson and Cal Ripken Jr. just going through the post-mortem of Jorge Julio. But the Rockies, I want to have you guess on this. The Rockies, so 2004 National League Rookie of the Year voting. The number five finisher that year in Rookie of the Year voting was Matt Holliday. The Rockies also had number four, and number six was later a Rocky. That was Kaz Matsui. But guess who finished fourth in National League Rookie of the Year voting in 2004?
It would have been Francis. Was it Luis A. Gonzalez?
No. Oh. No, but Luis A. Gonzalez was good. That was a good guess.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any way you're going to get it, because I would never get this.
In 2004, wouldn't have been Atkins at that point. I don't know. Who
Aaron Miles.
No kidding. No.
Yeah.
Because it was the next opening day where he had five hits against the Padres, right?
It was 2005 when they won on the walk-off.
The Parmas walk-off on Hoffman.
Yeah.
Which, hey, segue, Trevor Hoffman coming in the game.
Wow! Look at how perfect that was.
How about that?
Also,
guys, we're professionals here on the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
Did they just not go to a commercial break there? What is that all about?
No, because this was so far past the time. This game went 4 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah,
so they were so
forever.
Far past time that they didn't have any more commercial space to give.
No,
whenever they went to break, they just sent it back to the studio. Trust me, I know how TV works now.
That
so,
is hilarious.
Yeah.
So Trevor Hoffman. Okay, Trevor Hoffman.
So 2.53 ERA this year in this season, 2.17 opponent average, 42 of 48 in save opportunities. Still considered at this point in 2007 one of the greatest closers of all time. Still, obviously, to this day, still one of the greatest closers of all time. But he had basically been as good as can possibly imagine. The Padres were a very good team that year, and he was a huge part of that.
This was the guy that you in no way wanted to see. But the Rockies somehow always seemed to face Hoffman well. I mean, 05, that was the big one against Trevor Hoffman. Before this was the walk-off home run, Clint Barmas in opening day.
Right.
It seemed like they always were able to give Hoffman fits. Kaz Matsui's leading things off. He's hitting left-handed. But, God, you did not want to see Trevor Hoffman.
So
and that I remember when that bullpen gate swung open, it was like, ugh, never
mind. In his career against the Rockies, 54 of 61 in save opportunities. 95 Ks and 90 and two-thirds. So really, to this point, he had just absolutely shut down the Rockies, save for a game, which was Clint Barmas in opening day in 2005. That was pretty much it at this point.
It's 2-0 on Kaz. Kaz is one of my favorite all-time Rockies and was like barely a Rocky. I love Kaz, though.
Yeah.
I love Kaz because he turned things around in a way that nobody really expected him to.
He was supposed to be so good for the Mets. He was the next Ichiro. And he always hit home runs on opening day and then never again.
He came over to the Rockies, played in 32 games in 2006 and then 104 games in 2007. He was briefly back with the Rockies in 2010. He played 82 games that year for AAA Colorado Springs. But, yeah, he was supposed to be the infield Ichiro. Came over after playing the first 9 years of his career with Cebu. the Lions in the Pacific League in Japan. It was a stud over there. He was like a billion time All-Star and was great. And it just never happened. He got to the Mets and it just never happened.
Well, he got to 2-2 and Hoffman tried to throw a fastball up at his letters and he barely got a piece of that one.
That's what I loved about Kaz, though. Just fire the hands, waste pitches. Yeah. He was so much fun to watch.
This year in 07, 288 with the Rockies that year. Four homers, 37 ribbies in 104 games. 32 stolen bases in 36 attempts.
By the way, Kaz is still playing professional baseball. I want
Good
you all
for
to
him.
Know. Kaz, this year, it is. Boom!
Crushed to right center.
That was a shot, and he was so quick, too.
Yeah.
He got into second the time Jason Lane had that ball.
Jason Lane, oh my God.
Jason Lane, I think, is still in professional baseball.
Is he pitching?
Well. I believe so. And I think he's in the Padres system. I want to say he's in was with AAA El Paso last year. So, okay. So, leadoff double, you're feeling okay about yourselves at this point.
Sure. But we know what happens.
Wow. That's true. That's true. But still, you kind of remember thinking to yourself, like, they still need to string together a bunch of hits against Trevor Hoffman, it's probably not going to happen. You know? Here's two
looks. Yes.
That's what made it so scary.
Yes.
It just, that never happened against Trevor Hoffman.
No.
There's a changeup. God, that pitch was so nasty.
So, to that point, Trevor Hoffman had allowed 14 doubles in 49 appearances that, or 60 appearances that year. He had 14 doubles before that Kaz hit. And Tulo takes a fastball there. Like, he just did not allow extra base hits.
No, no. If you got a hit off of Trevor Hoffman, it was like a joke. It was like,
he allowed two homers, two triples, and 14 doubles in 57 innings, spanning 60 games.
Good God.
In that year.
Trevor Hoffman, if you traded Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera, if you put Trevor Hoffman in New York and Mariano Rivera in San Diego, very similar careers to what the other had. That's how good Trevor Hoffman was. Everybody talks about Rivera and how great he was. If Hoffman was on teams and he was, of course. Yeah. But if Hoffman was on teams that great, he is as good or better than Rivera to me. 2-2 on Tulo.
Tulo fouls that one off. And that's the thing with, you know, the Hall of Fame vote now is obviously closers have seen a reduced, I don't know, idea of how valuable they actually are with a team with the influx of analysis in the last 15, 20 years. Doesn't mean that Trevor Hoffman wasn't amazing at what he did. Doesn't mean that Mariano Rivera wasn't amazing at what he did.
Right.
Like, those teams need those guys. They just don't necessarily need them in the ninth inning all the time. And that's what the big difference is between the dichotomy between sabermetrics and everything else.
Man, that was close.
Yeah.
Tulo rocketed one first base side. That
you can
barely
give actually first person like recap of actually what happened while you were there. Obviously, I was watching this, drunk as hell, watching this in Gambier, Ohio.
Man, like, I just remember like the struggle of being a Rockies fan is that you're positive everything's going to go wrong. You know, so you're positive like, okay, Tulo will get a hit here. Kaz will score. They'll get to within one.
Do you think we're more bitter now? Because at this point, there was only one playoff appearance
in franchise history.
In franchise history in, 14 years?
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, really. I mean, so since we got the two appearances in 3 years, are we more bitter now about them sucking than we were
on
October 1st, 2007?
That is a really good question. Too low to the gap.
Oh,
that ball, I thought off the bat, was going to get to the wall, and it didn't. And Tulo barely got to second.
I mean, whoever was playing center field at that point, he was playing at the warning track.
Yeah. So
it wasn't center field at that point. It was Jason Lane. So
Jason Lane.
Yeah.
So Tulo and Kaz trade places. So now Tulo is at second. This is when I think I started feeling like that it was going to happen.
Yeah. So prior to the game where Hoffman blew it against Tony Gwynn Jr.
Yeah.
He had not.
Yeah. You kind of forget that too. Hoffman took that one too.
He had allowed one run in his previous 10 appearances.
Oh man. Holiday. This, I thought it was over.
I thought that was it. I thought that was it right there.
So Holiday goes oppo. Brian Giles jumps at the wall. That ball hit
up.
That weird dead spot like at the top of the padding, and it bounced back over Giles. That's why Holiday got all the way to third. So two low scores. Everybody's going insane. This is
tied.
These are my favorite moments in sports when the fans are going so nuts, and it's one of those seconds, those brief seconds where sound has like a physical feel to it. Like you can see the camera shaking because of the way that everybody's going insane. I thought this was over though. I thought it was gone. And then I remember seeing like, why is Giles running? I thought it had hit off the top of the wall above the yellow line and come back.
You know, you forget how fast this happened.
Yeah, you do. I was thinking this is going to be like a 35 minute inning.
Trevor
it
Hoffman,
really wasn't.
In the whole inning threw 19 pitches.
My God. Okay, so Holiday, because that ball bounced over Brian Giles, of course, now Holiday is at third. This also shows you how long ago this was. The base coaches are not wearing helmets. That's how long ago this was.
That was Mike Coolbaugh. That was,
2008, I want to say.
Eight or nine. And that's Rockies double-A coach in Tulsa at that point.
Yeah.
Trevor Hoffman not giving up multiple runs in a game since August 21st. In this season until this day.
This
October 1st. He only gave up more than two runs in a game besides this game once more in that 2007 year, and that was April 27th.
Good gravy. That's insane. That shows you how lucky and how good this team had to be in this spot. They're intentionally walking Todd Helton, which, you know,
Sure.
You have to. Well, it would have been a storybook thing for the Rockies, but you have to.
You got
to
do it at that point. Yeah.
What I don't get is, why do you not walk Jamie Carroll here?
To get forced at any base?
Forced at any base. You have nobody out, and the game-winning run is at third.
Right.
You're not gaining anything by turning a double play.
No,
unless you pull the infield in, keep the runner at third and turn
Brad
a double play,
Hop
and that's almost impossible.
And Hop is a double play candidate.
Right, and a guy who struggles a little bit with off-speed stuff.
Yeah.
Here's Buddy Bell. Buddy Black. But this was Buddy Black's first year, I think, in San Diego, wasn't it?
I believe he had 06.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Let's see. It was his first year. You're absolutely right.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So Bochy had just left.
Yeah.
Man. He was fifth in NL Manager of the Year voting that year.
Bud Black was?
Yeah.
Who won it that year?
Bob Melvin.
Oh, the D-backs.
Clint Hurdle finished third, and it's because, you know, everybody votes and turns stuff in before the season's, like, started. Clint Hurdle finished third. Charlie Manuel finished second that year.
This was the year that the Rockies
should have won everything.
And lost everything. Tulo should have won Rookie of the Year. Ryan Braun won it. Holiday should have won MVP. Jimmy Rollins won it, which is ridiculous.
Yep.
Hurdle should have won Manager of the Year, and obviously Melvin won it. No, all of it was too, because they it's like the Heisman Trophy. They turned in all their votes, like, it would still
right, exactly.
2 weeks left of the regular season.
Here it is.
First pitch.
Oh, my God.
Here comes Holiday.
This is what I don't
He still
get,
has a touchdown
though.
Play now.
Even if he hasn't touched home plate.
Everyone says, like, oh, it was a delayed call. It was a second after Holiday went across the plate that Tim McClellan made that call. A second.
What a bizarre moment. God, that is... Yeah, you really... I think you put it very well. You forget how quickly this happened.
And Holiday being checked out now. Like, we all thought Holiday was dead. Like,
yeah.
We're like... Well, we're so euphoric, but at the same time, we're like, oh, wait. Holiday's dead. Duggar's out there checking on Holiday. Glenn Allen Hill's around. There's a bunch of trainers around him, coaches. And... You know, at the same time, everybody else is celebrating because they just won the first, basically, playoff game in 12 years. He's sitting on the turf being treated by Duggar right now.
Man. God, there were a lot of likable guys on that team.
Yeah.
This is the best moment of my sports fandom ever. This is better than them winning the National League. This is better than them making the playoffs in 09. This moment, nothing. For the rest of my life, I don't think anything will compare to 163. You know, like everything that they had to do to even get there. And then to win that game, you're down two runs in the ninth against Trevor Hoffman.
In the 13th.
God.
Trevor
Hoffman,
not the ninth. In the 13th.
Oh, yeah. In the 13th. What did I just say? The ninth?
Yeah.
Look at Dinger. Dinger's out there in his jersey. Yeah. The Rockies have a great photo at, I think it's at Salt River Field's, a talking stick of Holiday.
Of Holiday, like,
he's like concussed, like sitting up, like Duggar's checking on him, and everybody else is celebrating around him. It's so great. And I remember in the 21 Days DVD, I think it was Spilly said, or one of the guys said, they all ran to the plate getting ready to mob Holiday. And the thing that happened was, we're watching it on the replay right now, Holiday slides head first. As he's coming in, his left hand gets jammed
by Michael Barrett. Yeah.
Under the spikes of Barrett. So with that, his momentum takes his face just right into the dirt.
Oh, God, it was such a big
play. Which is basically like cement.
Little Ubaldo. Look at little Ubaldo.
Yeah, little Ubaldo.
Little Ubaldo. Who knew that he'd become such a dick later in his career for the Rockies?
And this is when the crew, this is when the broadcast crew is starting to figure out that Holiday may never have touched the plate.
Yeah.
Yeah, just said. He still hasn't.
Like, okay, so like my conspiracy theory, I'll defuse that. McClellan called him safe, and that's all that matters. But Holiday, although you don't see him take it over the actual plate, the fact of the matter is Barrett had his left foot on the plate. Holiday hit his foot and drug Barrett's foot along the plate and back off the back angle. So in theory, there's no way he wouldn't have touched it.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah.
Not to mention right now, that's an illegal block of the plate anyway.
Well, sure, but it wasn't.
So right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, God, man, that night, that moment, that, like, and it was perfect. Like, for me, I'm 22, I'm unemployed. I went to like 40 Rockies games that summer because I had nothing else to do. I went to every home game from Helton's walk-off through the
Craig
World
Sager
Series.
Interviewing David Carroll. It's so fucking funny. Oh, my God.
Let's see what Jamie Carroll has to say.
Like, also, Craig Sager, like, a demure jacket. It's like, it's
yeah, it's just like very normal.
With stripes, and that's it.
It's the most normal thing in his wardrobe. Yeah.
Jamie Carroll, not a pretty man.
Yeah, Jamie Carroll's a weird looking. Jamie Carroll was just like 2007 Aaron Miles. He was just like the different, like a different
you know
looking
what?
Version of
Jamie
the same
Carroll
guy.
Should have won a Gold Glove in 2006.
Yeah,
he had a fantastic year 2006 with the Rockies. He hit 300 that year. I think he committed like negative four errors. I'm pretty sure that's accurate. I'm pretty sure. Like, yeah. I work in stats. That's probably accurate.
By the way, Craig Sager just said one of the guys you got to go celebrate with got injured on the play. To which Jamie Carroll responded, "Who?" But I'm pretty sure. Oh, whiskey's getting to me. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that in the 21 Days DVD, I think it's Spilly, said, we all ran to the plate to celebrate with Holiday, and then we saw, like, Duggar's there, like, evaluating. He has no idea where he was. So we just turned around and ran off to go grab Jamie Carroll. They just all, like, yeah, whatever, we'll see you later, Matt.
Oh, so 2007, Jamie Carroll committed two errors at second base.
What?
Two errors at third base and one error. No, not even one error. Four errors the entire year and
that's
didn't
insane.
Win the Gold Glove. Because I think Orlando Hudson won it by committing like 30 errors but getting like 25 web gems. And that's what Gold Glove voting used to be. It should be like, how many web gems?
Yeah, exactly. Had. How many web gems and also how many RBIs for some reason? Remember that year Rafael Palmeiro won a Gold Glove when he played like 12 games in the field?
Well, then Matt Holliday was a player of the game, 2-for-6, 2 RBI, game-winning run
Chevrolet
in 13.
Player of the game.
Yeah.
From the old folks at TBS. Yeah, game-winning RBI and drove in the game tying, or the game-winning run and drove in the game tying run. Man. I don't know if it'll ever get that good again. Like, I know one day they'll be back there and it'll be great, but I don't know if it'll ever compare. Like, 95 was awesome.
I was
at 95.
Recognize people who are, like, interviewing people, like, when they're running away right now. I mean,
who was the radio team back then? I think it was still – no, it was Corrigan.
It was Corrigan and Kingery, yeah.
Wayne Hagen had moved on and was lobbing PED accusations at people.
Yeah, which is what he does best.
Man, oh, man. God, what a game.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, that was something. That was something right there.
Now the sad reality that was 8.5 years ago.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Lord.
Ugh.
Man,
it really was though.
That's pretty awesome.
Well, like,
that's
can you
awesome.
Just imagine that game happening like right now? Like, how amazing was that? I mean, I was in Ohio.
LaTroy.
Yeah, I was in Ohio. Was there?
Yeah.
Yeah, LaTroy, man, God. Young LaTroy when he was only 35.
He still looks the exact same today.
Yeah.
Young LaTroy looks the exact
95.
Same. Now, 95. Still throwing 95, and he'll probably pitch until he's 1,000. I don't believe that he's actually retired.
Yeah. God.
This I do distinctly remember. All the Latin American players all got together and were celebrating, and all the white guys were celebrating. Like, everybody went out. They all went nuts together for a while, and then they just all broke off into their own little groups.
Listen,
look at this team. This team's
we've worked
great.
With teams before. We know that's it's a cliquey sport.
Yep.
Like, a lot of times the white guys don't really mesh well with the Latin American guys. It's not – they don't like the guys. It's just –
There's a language barrier.
Yeah, when they want to converse with their own people, they will. And you know, it's not anything malicious toward the other guys. It's just
this is what's crazy to me about this. Watching this coverage now, since I was there, I've never seen this. I never realized how quickly the controversy started that he hadn't touched the plate. Because even Ernie Johnson and Cal Ripken are talking about it right now. Yeah, I did not realize that this was like immediately people were like, dude, never even touched the plate.
So, like, okay, so hand stepped on, Barrett's foot gets dragged back across the back of the diamond, back of the Pentagon, like the point of the Pentagon of home plate. So I don't know how he doesn't touch it.
Yeah, that's true. That's a fair point.
It wasn't like his leg shot out and Holiday was just there. His leg was literally dragged the direct angle of home plate. Now,
also,
you know that the jet fuel can't burn metal beams.
Pete Carroll's joining the next edition of the show.
Yeah. Good for the Seahawks for continuing to win. That's great that the Seahawks are.
Oh, isn't that terrific? Glad we get to deal with that again. Yeah.
Love Seahawks fans. You know, they called the 12 because they've been fans since 2012.
Really?
Yeah.
That is very fitting. The thing that bothers me most on this clinch NL wild card, they have wild card up there, is one.
It's
word.
One word.
It's not one word. It's two words. The thing about the Holiday Barrett play, to me, Michael Barrett does not make a clean catch and tag.
No.
Never came away with the ball.
No.
Crawled over, got the ball, went back to tag Matt Holiday.
But never actually did.
But never did because already Tim McClellan had signaled safe. Even if he did go and tag Matt Holiday, the safe call was already made. The play ends right there. It's not
as if. There's no replay then. Yeah.
No, exactly. And it's not as if Barrett makes a clean catch, slaps a tag down, a second maybe too late based on a safe call, whatever, if that had been the dispute. There was never even a catch and tag. So I get it. Like, if I was a Padres fan, my best friend in college was Padres fan, I get it. I'd be heartbroken.
You're a Padres fan, you're furious.
Still 8 years later be like, Matt Holiday never touched a plate. But come on, it's a non-issue.
Yeah, give it up.
Look at all these happy Rockies fans.
Oh, God. Remember when there were happy Rockies fans?
Yeah, right? For two times in 3 years and almost three times in 4 years. And
oh, man. And, you know, the Clint Hurdle thing is the most fascinating thing of all. I mean, the players hated Hurdle so much that when he got fired, they went and won the wild card by being the best team in baseball for the last 4 months of the season because they were so happy to be rid of Clint Hurdle.
Yeah.
Hurdle goes to Pittsburgh. First couple of years, they're meh. You know, they realize the team wants to go in a more analytical direction. They say, Clint, you can either get on board or you cannot.
Yep.
And he gets on board. And now all of a sudden, Clint Hurdle is one of the more forward thinking analytical managers, considered one of the best managers in the game right now because he embraced the other aspect of the game that he had neglected for so long. And good for him because he saw the light. He had a come to Jesus moment and they realized that. You know, the Pirates had one way they were going to go, and they wanted to go with Hurdle, but if he wasn't going to be along for the ride, then they would have just ditched him easily. But
it is pretty amazing, the kind of chameleon work that he's done in his
career.
But
it's great for him. Like,
it's great for him.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, good for Hurdle. I mean, it's good for him.
This, like, gives me butterflies to see. Wednesday, NLDS Game 1, 3 o'clock.
He's at Phillies.
He's at Phillies. It was so exciting. There is nothing as exciting as a postseason in this town. In any town, really, but in a town that's insulated, that is isolated from other cities. I mean, we're 500 miles from the closest thing you could be really. Yeah, look at that graphic. Man, oh, man. There's something about postseason in any sport in Denver that brings out a different energy than a whole lot of other places where you could be.
Sure, you can
and
talk
that
about
was
it right
what was
now.
So I mean, exciting about it. Yeah, we can talk about it right now. And it's different with the Broncos because it's a more regular thing. But when the Rockies have been there, it's felt like you're party crashing. You know what I mean? Like, it's felt like...
Well, it'll always feel like that.
Right, which it always will. But that somehow unites a fan base more than anything else. The Broncos are, you know, I mean, they're NFL royalty because of the success they've had. But when it's the Rockies, you feel like the high school kid who's been invited to the Fortune 500 board meeting.
Also, by the way, old eHarmony commercial.
Did we really dress like this in 2007? Do people really dress like this?
I don't think so. Like, I think it's...
What is
it's,
this dude's V-neck sweater?
It's a V-neck sweater with, like, a generic brown T-shirt underneath it. And he's trying to get a woman.
What is he wearing? This is terrible. Oh, I remember this
one.
Oh,
God, yeah.
That big nose guy from... he was from 8 Men Out.
Yes.
And yes. Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
And he also played an angry Italian once in Scrubs. I just watched that episode the other night. I'm sorry.
What the hell is this commercial for?
It got to be insurance, right? It's got to be insurance.
Is this like the forerunner to...
No way, it's not insurance. It's like an explosion.
Oh, it is insurance. Traveler's insurance.
Yeah, come on.
What's got to be like the forerunner to the Mayhem guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God. Huh. Dennis Duffy. Yeah.
Weird. Huh. God, it was so much fun to have a good baseball team around.
What commercial is this? Oh, there's an otter.
A kid was picking up a turtle for some reason.
Did you see that video of the turtle like jumping and killing that man? That was great.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, good for the turtle.
Not good with that. Good for the turtle.
Yeah, the guy was just taunting that turtle. He deserved to get his face bitten off by said turtle.
Oh my God, the Sonic commercials.
Oh, Sonic.
I still find these commercials hysterical.
The first guys, this is all the same guys doing the Sonic commercials
and they're
in 2007 as it was in 2016.
Yeah, and they're awesome.
The guy on the right, it was a writer for Colbert when he was still on Comedy Central, I know.
Oh.
The guy on the left, I think, is they did like UCB together, Second City kind of stuff.
Okay.
It's funny that's... 9 years later, they're still doing the same commercials.
They're still doing the same commercials, and they're still hilarious.
Oh, they're still...
I still laugh hysterically
some of the best
at those.
Yeah.
Here's
Vladimir Guerrero.
Here's a postseason promo. Won't have the Rockies in it. God, that was just a year removed from that Mets-Cardinals series.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
Wow.
And
oh,
when,
my God.
When the Cardinals won the World Series with, like, the worst team ever.
Yeah, they were, like, an 84-win team that year, I think.
Maybe four wins.
Man, and The Office, they were already showing Office episodes on TBS?
Wow, there's already a syndication of that.
Oh, we're so old! Ah,
yeah, I never watched The Office. I never did.
Really?
Yeah, I never did. Huh. I watched Parks and Rec. I never watched The Office, which is, I don't know why. Like, I never got into it.
But... I never watched 30 Rock.
Oh,
everybody,
man.
I know.
You should really watch 30 Rock's really, really, really...
Yeah, everybody loves them all, and I just never got into either of them.
Did you try 30 Rock or Parks and Rec? Parks and Rec...
I've
like
never tried Parks and Rec. I've briefly tried 30 Rock. And, like, it's sort of funny. I'm just prejudicial against anything on NBC because I hate what they did to Conan. So, like, 10 years later, I still just hate NBC for no reason. Hey, here's Todd! And he's getting mobbed by... Matt Holliday is just so concussed and drugged up at this point.
He's so concussed. Yeah, they give him, like... They give him a couple, like, shots of Valium. He's like, oh, my God, I'm so great. I'm going to go hug everybody. You guys, yo... By the way, Todd, do you know how you feel right now? You feel like pennies.
You're so, so soft, man.
By the way, here's interviewing Todd.
And then he just, like, kicked Todd out. I was like, oh, Holiday's here.
Jumped on Todd, and then Holiday bogarted the interview. Todd's like, all right, bye. And now he's interviewing Matt Holiday. What the hell?
Todd Helton just totally got Wally Pipped in this interview.
But I think Todd Helton was fine with it.
That's amazing.
I'm not sure you wanted to talk to Craig Sager, to be perfectly
honest.
Look
at that old 103.5 The Fox. What is 103.5 The Fox doing there?
Wow.
They care. It's not a sports station.
What is that?
What is that mic flag
there
for?
Denver?
Yeah, it's a classic rock station. Also.
Oh, Sager, do you ever touch the plate? The umpire said I did. That's what Matt Holliday said. Sager, do you ever touch the plate?
Oh, that giant raspberry on his chin. Ugh, gross.
It's also the precursor to the commercial the next year when Holiday stole the jelly donut.
Holiday, did you touch that? Also, this is not like common media practice
no,
to go up
no.
and put your microphones in front of a live television.
By the way, this
interview.
Is not
this
a
isn't podium sound.
Random Denver.
Yeah, right? Who is that? Who are those people?
TBS and Craig Sager. By the way,
Craig Sager's conducting an exclusive interview on TV, and these other reporters just walk up and put their microphones back on Holiday's face.
I'm sure you know those people who are just violating every journalist etiquette.
That is not at all the way things work.
That's not okay.
Huh. That was interesting.
Like, if Sager wanted to, we could have been like, yo,
hey, you guys get the hell out of here, please. Huh. How random. Yeah, man, that grand slam. When Adrian Gonzalez hit that grand slam, they're going through the highlights now. Rockies are up 3-0, one out in the third, and Gonzalez just obliterated a grand slam to give the Padres a lead. I did not feel good about things after that. Not at all.
The four Padres fans that were there?
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
They were happy then.
They were really pumped. To be fair, there's really only like four Padres fans, period.
Yeah, they're mostly in like La Jolla.
Yeah,
like, La Jolla. But they're all going to be in L.A. now because they have the Chargers, so who cares?
Yeah, that's true.
But they're going to have the Chargers.
San Diego would be the only only major metropolitan area with only a Major League Baseball team. No, by the way. Seth Smith!
That would be right, wouldn't it?
Seth Smith. I love him so much.
Because Milwaukee still has the Bucks. Yeah.
Yep. Also, this was so far, we only did the 13th inning. You remember the, here it is, the Atkins home run that wasn't in the seventh.
And that was Garrett the year Atkins. Where like the year, like, or the 2 year stretch where every single Rockies home run that wasn't, they got screwed on the call. Yeah. Every time it was a home run, they always got called it back. I was at a game in Cincinnati the following April where Atkins, another ball just like that.
Cincinnati.
It was a home run, clearly.
It hit a pole beyond the wall and bounced back on the field.
But that's every time the Rockies had that opportunity, they always got boned by the call.
And that would have, in the seventh inning, given the Rockies a two-run lead. They ended up only having a one-run lead, and then they gave up that lead in the eighth.
Yeah, because Brian
So that could have. They could have won it in nine.
His stupid face.
Julio's face.
Yeah. Crappy brother.
Brian Giles, sucked. Marcus Giles, and all of their muscle-bound shortness, all their muscle-bound 5'5" frames.
Yeah, and like domestic violence and stuff. Like, whatever.
Yeah, they're not good. They're not a good baseball family. Not good people at all.
They're not good people at all.
Oh my god! All right, one more time. Let's watch this thing.
Yeah.
This has been fun. This has been outstanding. I don't even care if you guys liked it. We had fun. Yeah. So whatever.
When
Brian Giles murdered himself against the wall, I thought that was it. I thought Holiday was going to be able to score.
He absolutely murked himself.
He really did. He jumped up and was like face, like right into the support beam. Oh, Brian Giles is dead.
When this play happened, Giles' throw had such an arc on it. Yeah. I have no idea how Holiday.
It was like something I would have thrown.
Beat it to the plate anyway.
It really, like, that thing could have brought rain. That's like what I would have thrown.
Yeah, I really don't know how he didn't get that. I don't get that part. I really don't. Like, it was such
not a slow guy.
Like, it was
Holiday's
very a
good
accurate
runner.
Throw, but it was just he just chucked it up into the sky.
Yeah, basically. That's one of my favorite things. Is Hop Brad Hop runs up,
like,
gets set to celebrate, then stops for a second.
All right,
and then he looks over and sees a Tim McClellan has signaled safe, and then the celebration gets started. And the celebration doesn't even get started with Brad Hop. Everybody rushes around him to get to Matt Holiday. Ramon Ortiz got the win. 5-4. Tulo went 4-7 in that game. Hashtag pitcher wins. Oh, my God. What a game.
Rockies took the season series with the Phillies that year.
Rockies batted 327
look at
the ERAs. Phillies.
504 for the Rockies, 640 for the Phillies in the seven games they played that year.
Man, remember Pat Burrell?
Oh, God, Pat
Burrell.
Burrell
batted 421 against the Rockies that year? I hated it.
I think he batted like 421 against like the Rockies in every year.
Yeah, probably. Oh, man, this is fun. This is a lot of fun.
This was
Ernie and Cal are bidding farewell. Should we do the same?
I think we probably should. I think it's about that time. I think we've done enough damage here.
I think this is going to be an all-time PDP record in terms of length of this episode, and I'm happy about it because this has been a hell of a good one. So for those of you complaining, we'll be back to a regular schedule now, though, because we got stuff coming up. We got spring training on the horizon, Rockies pitchers and catchers report, I believe the 15th, I want to say, 15th or 16th, somewhere around there.
It's probably somewhere around there. Who cares?
19th? I don't know.
My 40's almost done. I need a new one.
I'm powering through this whiskey as well. It's delightful. Yeah, this program has been a production of TBS, copyright 2007, Office of the Commissioner of Baseball. And yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Oh,
it was the start
Friends
of a Friends episode.
Oh, Friends, Friends was just coming on.
God, oh, my God. Oh, that would have been great. God, I wonder what episode that was.
I wish it was the one where they were in the blackout.
Oh, that's a good one.
And Chandler was stuck in the ATM vestibule.
Yeah, with the Joel model, Goodacre. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Joan Goodacre. What was her first name?
Vestibule with Jill Goodacre.
Jill Goodacre.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Stuck in the vestibule with Jill Goodacre.
Triumph and Tragedy, the story of the 1984 San Diego Padres. Did that just pop up for you also?
Sure did.
Oh, wow. Jerry Coleman. Oh, man. Now I'm going to be stuck watching stuff on YouTube all night.
All right. Bye.
All right. Yeah. Until next week. We'll talk to you guys then. Send us your questions, thoughts, comments, concerns, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com.
If you guys hated this, let us know.
Yeah. If you loved,
loved it. Let us know, because also, we really have no idea how you're going to react.
And we had a lot of fun with it. So, yeah, enjoy. We enjoyed. Hopefully you enjoyed as well. No, I don't think there's anything else.
No, I'm good.
All right. Talk to you next week or whenever.
Bye.
Love you. Bye. Ready? All right. Wait, what are we going on? Are we going on three or are we going on go?
Rock, paper, scissors, shoot.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay.
We'll go on.
Okay.
One, two, three, go. How
okay.
about that?
Okay. Okay.
One, two, three, go.